This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show or a podcast, number 98 in the series for Franklin Matters. This is the sixth of a series of eight audio segments recorded during the informational session on the new high school. The forum was conducted by the school building committee and held at the Horace Mann Auditorium on Thursday, November 17th, 2011. This sixth segment continues the question and answer period with Tom Mercer, School Building Committee Chair, Jim Jordan, partner and owner of AI3 Architects, and Sean Fennell, Project Manager, providing most of the answers. School Superintendent Maureen Sabalinski joins the conversation to provide some key answers, for example, on the cluster model and visioning process, and how the high school education can lead to a better vocational choice. The questions covered during this segment include: where will they play while the fields are being used to build the school? The new fields, will they be seed or turf? In your campaign, how are you approaching those without school-age children? And you seem to be surprised about the cluster arrangement. If we are designing a building, can we validate that this is a good thing to do? So, without further ado, here is the recording from Thursday evening, November 17th.
Yes, ma'am.
Where will they use the fields? Where in the interim, like when the fields are gone?
That's, you're probably the first one that's asked that question. And I have an answer for it. And actually, I have an answer only because I happen to have a conversation with a close friend. But during this process, during the construction process, obviously, the current varsity baseball field, which is here, and the girls' varsity softball field would be displaced. For 2 years during the construction process, and probably for a year of replacement once you tear down the existing school. Just to brief, because I was with him, I had a conversation with the athletic director, Dean, and we discussed briefly if there might be an option there, and the thought process was if the athletic department at the high school, and again, I have had no conversation with the school committee or the athletic department, so this is just my tidbit. If we front-end the away games onto the beginning of the high school schedule in the spring, Dean will have exit, and we would be able to use their facilities. So,
there's also fields that are used, though, like for soccer practice.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Everything like that. So that would be your proposal.
That was just an initial conversation.
So it's something that's
my initial question to him was basically.
We've had conversations about this already at the high school in the district, and Dean was on an option. Looking at other town fields, there are fields at some of our middle school complexes that we could use. And many of you don't know, King Philip did a renovation and lost their fields. We worked a deal where when the FHS football team was away, they used the Franklin fields. So, you know, we look to collaborate with our neighbors. We have a lot of options. We know kids will not be displaced, and they'll be able to run all of their sports. And we're hoping that within some of the fields in town, we can accomplish that with Dean.
And Dean's Lincoln Street facility is huge.
And the new fields, are those planned on being grass fields
or?
Yes.
Sod.
Excuse me.
Sod or seed?
We're not there yet, but I'm guessing seed.
All of us are seed.
Yes.
Yeah. My name is Maxwell Margello, and I'm the webmaster for the Invest in Franklin site, and we, you know, campaigned to increase funds for the town several times, and if we want to push for this high school. And we want to make sure that people are educated about it, know all the facts. But we got to plan ahead. And if, you know, people are interested in trying to start you know, getting a group of people together to start trying to get the word out about this high school so people can make an informed decision. We can, you know, try to do that after the meeting. So thank you.
And obviously that's our intent, and that's why we've started even with this early one. Maybe it's a little premature, but I felt it was soon enough to at least get some initial information. And there was so much talk about, well, how do we go to from a renovation to what we're currently at a model school? So I thought it was important that we at least get some initial information out. We will do another one of these in early January, and we'll probably do two or three more. If there's anybody that has a group, whether it be a group that gets together, whether it be PCC, we'll be more than happy. The committee's totally invested. We'd be more than happy to come to any of those.
So in your campaign, it's obvious for us that have school-aged children, but how are you approaching the people, the residents in the community that don't have children? What's your sell to them on this process? And what's your campaign look like to address them?
Again, I don't know. I'll give you a simple statement that I've used to people that have asked me that same question. I went to school in Franklin. My children went to school in Franklin. No one goes to school in Franklin anymore. But my three daughters did go through the schools in Franklin. I had three in school at the same time. My tax bill at the time might have been $3,000, $4,000. And per pupil expenditure in Franklin is
$10,000.
At the time, it was probably $6,000. So let's see. I was paying $4,000 and getting $18,000 worth of services. Somebody paid for mine when they went through this thing. It's time they paid for this.
But you have to convince them.
Exactly. And that's my point.
I'm all about it as well.
Understood.
We have that population that we have to bring to the table.
Absolutely. I don't want to pay a dollar more in taxes, but I'll certainly pay for this.
Looking at Selma, because I've been a resident for many years and been on every override, it's the parents who have to get out and vote. I think people are quick to blame the senior citizens. In my experience working on overrides and debt exclusions, going back to Arlington Jefferson, the senior citizens, when we talk to them and explain, they can connect the dots and see, this makes really good fiscal sense. Traditionally, it's our parents who don't come out and vote, or vote no. The users of the schools, and to our credit, some of our employees of the school department are the biggest naysayers. So, I mean, I think our challenge is to get the parents out to vote and our employees and explain to them, really, why there's a cost-benefit to the community. I mean, from my perspective, my kids went through the schools, they're gone. I'm concerned about the value of my home right now. It will go up, and I think one of the groups we need to reach out to, and I'll talk to Ed, are the realtors. They have a real vested interest in the success of this. Maybe they can come up with some funding for a campaign and do some of the research on what the impact would be on all of our homes. But I think the key group we have to get out in the vote are our parents.
But
and our preschool parents, too.
And I agree with Martin totally. And one of my plans is to take this same meeting to the senior center.
Yeah, absolutely.
And at least give them all the information, which is the best that we can do, is give them factual information to make an informed decision.
There are things as a government entity that you're prohibited from doing.
You're absolutely correct.
And that's something that the citizens have to fill.
That is absolutely correct. We can't, as a committee, go out and... Exactly. Which is why we need the citizen-based committee, which there's always been. Right, Mrs. Stolman? Yes.
Just one thing that just kind of comes back a little bit is you're talking about this goal that someone in Franklin, in the educational area, had come up with these eight clusters they want to put in the building. You act a little bit surprised by that because you haven't done that before. Can someone comment on that a little bit? I just want to make sure that we're designing this in some kind of pattern of day that, you know, if we turn these rooms off, classrooms, that...
Sure. I'm sorry. I don't think for those of you who don't know this, Maureen Solis, she's superintendent of schools. So you can repeat your question, I'm sure.
No, I was just asking about the cluster model.
Yes.
I'm not familiar with that. I'm sure maybe just because it's something that's new. And my concern is that if we're designing a building and we're incorporating this idea, that if it turns out that it's maybe long-term not the best way to sort of educate people and get them back to a more traditional classroom style, is the facility capable of handling that? Or?
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of the clusters. If you wanted in 20 years to go back to a more departmentalized model, and for those of you who don't know, departmental model, math classes here, science classes here, social studies in this wing. In the cluster model, students are clustered around, you know, there's classes are integrated. So there's a math class next to a science lab or the social studies. And what really the goal is now, looking at the data and research on 21st century learning, that students really need to learn in a more interdisciplinary manner. Most of us, you know, you went to math class and you went to science. Right now we're facilitating having students, you know, team teaching, a humanities approach. At the high school we have the Arts Academy, which is tailored to the needs of students who really are visual arts, musical arts, performing arts, and then all of their academics are integrated interdisciplinary in that that cluster. It really lends itself very well to other types of learning environments that may happen in 50 years. Right now, the way the high school, current high school is, it's, you know, wings that are very separate. This is much more integrated and much more fluid as far as flexibility to use the space in a variety of different ways. That we try to work with, the architects. And what was amazing is that when the visioning committee, that was 50 members of the community, including some of our students, we had community members, parents, school committee members, faculty, when we looked at what the needs of the 21st century learner was, we came up with our cluster model, and it really lent itself to the design of this building. And a lot of us who looked and met with all of the architectural firms, we spent a lot of time this summer in all of the model high schools. Most of the other model high schools did not meet the needs of our educational vision, and we really felt that this design is something that can be adaptable for the next 50, 60 years to whatever education brings. So, I mean, it really works out well.
The existing Franklin High School, when I don't even know when that was built.
72.
So what was the mindset, or what was the plan of that high school design?
Departmentalized in houses. 9th graders here, 10th graders here, 11th graders here, 12th graders here.
Seems like a pretty good idea, right?
Yeah, at the time.
Mm-hmm. But I think it even exists now, right? 9th graders really...
The 9th graders are more separate in the 9th grade collaborative, which is sort of a more modern middle school program.
Does it work?
Yes, it does. Okay. And then 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, so if you're a 10th grader, you know, you're going to be able to go into the Franklin Arts Academy and have a different experience. We'd like to also see some other different kinds of models. Right now, we just have the art cluster. We're looking at maybe something that's focused on health, human services, science and technology, really looking at students having an opportunity in their high school experience, not just to have the core academics, but to start really having an experience that might lead to some better vocational choices. I think as parents, you don't want your kids to start experimenting at $50,000 a year in the college environment. We think that we'd like to give students more opportunities vocationally to explore things through project-based learning, through internships, those kinds of experiences while they're in high school so they can make better decisions post-high school. I think there's a lot of data out there, career-changing, and many of us have done it many times, and I think the students coming up really need to have a broad based experience and have the opportunity to experiment in clusters without having to make those vocational decisions, you know, in college or change their mind midway through college. That has a big, bigger cost than the tax cost of this. So, I mean, we really think this is, you know, education for the 21st century, and our team, our visioning team, really felt that this was a good choice and that this facility really supports that educational vision now and can be adapted down the road for, you know, who knows what's going to happen in 20 or 30 years.
Be sure to listen to the other parts of this series. Part 1 covers the introduction and evolution of the Model School Invitation. Part 2, Jim Jordan, partner and owner of AI3 Architects, provides an overview of the building. Part 3 gets into the question and answers around educational space and construction cost. Part 4 covers the Q&A around various project costs and the overall process. Part 5 covers also the question and answers around the cost of designing a green building and the overall debt exclusion timing. Part 7 and 8 will continue the Q&A and bring us to the closing. While this podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, I can use your help. How can you help, you ask? If you like this, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. This feedback loop is so important. Thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.